6:00 PM, City Council Meeting Tuesday, October 25th, 2022. I'd like to acknowledge that the press and public were duly notified of the meeting in accordance with the Freedom of Information Act. Ask that you, if you can, join me standing for the invocation and follow by the Pledge of Allegiance. Father, we thank you for the day. We thank you for the beauty of the day. Thank you for this piece of paradise we get to work in and play in and live in. And just help us to be good stewards of that. And as we take care of business tonight, just help us to stay focused on the greater good and not of our own personal desires. In your name I pray. Amen.
Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can I have roll call, please?
Councilmember Pierce.
Here.
Councilmember Myers.
Here.
Councilmember Popson.
Here.
Councilmember Streetman.
Here.
Councilmember Ward.
Here.
Councilmember Anderson.
You're on mute.
Here.
Councilmember Bogosian.
Here.
Councilmember Han.
Here.
Mayor Pounds.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. Second item are citizens' comments. Nicole?
Mr. Klaus is up first.
Mr. Klaus, we have all new microphones, all new speakers. Life is good tonight.
And I've been practicing with a high volume. Nicole, I'm going to try to time myself here.
Okay.
Go.
Go.
Duration, music starts at 8:00 AM, continues throughout the day. Volume ebbs and flows, continuing into the night as late as 11:45, 12 o'clock. 2 to 5 daily concerts, outrageously loud, penetrates inside residences. Nighttime events, music and crowd noise, penetrates inside residences. Countless calls to the police. Eliminates the use of screened and other porches. Attempted mitigation in November of 21, the resort and their legal counsel were disingenuous, a train wreck. Resort theme park, cruise ship continues to bully and taunt us with additional volume. Last week, Desiree negotiated removal of 4 speakers, only resulting in turning up the volume to compensate. All speakers must be removed. Rob Walker, DBA, and his staff continually represented. They get 80 decibels, which we all know is a blatant misrepresentation per 9-2-5. There are no decibels. If you stoop this low, what else are you misrepresenting? Decibels are not the answer. The rule must be if the music and crowd noise is bothering someone, it is too loud. When we hear music on our screened porch, it is too loud. Commercial properties abutting, adjacent, or in line of sight to residential properties must conform to single-family standards, not their own. The onus is on the perpetrator. Wild Dunes Community Association, totally aware of this situation, never once reached out to us for help. Ironically, they are in violation of SC Code of Laws 6-29-740, which is posted on their website under Facts, and the Sacred Declaration of Covenants, page 4Q, page 21L, page 23, regarding Path 58. Contention, resort ran out of money on the south and southeast side of the property. No noise abatement measures, dramatically affecting a residential neighborhood. Contend, resort violated elevation requirements on the south-southeast perimeter. Elevation created a dam effect, potentially forcing storm surge towards a residential neighborhood. Contend, resort violated SC Code of Laws 56-2-105, constructing a cart path which merges into Path 58. Many thanks to Councilman Ward, Bogosian, Pierce, and Chief Cornett for conducting site inspections. Williamson's, Ryman's, Lillian, Klaus, thank you.
Ms. Campson?
In June of 2021, the Planning Commission was asked for recommendations regarding a potential cap on short-term rentals. 12 months and 14 public meetings later, planning submitted its recommendation, which, based upon the most extensive study of the issue to date, was for the establishment of a cap. We also learned that most of our livability codes are unenforceable. Enforcement of existing livability ordinances or the creation of new ones is not an answer. In 2022, the Barrier Island Preservation Alliance polled its subscribers, 91% full-time residents, and found that nearly 70% of the 94 respondents believe council should cap rental licenses. Tonight, we will hear a summary of a third review of the issue that compiles the thoughts and feelings of 140 residents and non-resident investors. The summary boils down to whether we should maintain the status quo. If we stick with the status quo from a cap perspective, no cap, every other issue we deal with relative to rental impact will increase exponentially. If you ask residents, would you like the impacts of seasonal visitation to stay at the current level? Most, if not all, would say yes. You can't effectively deal with those impacts going forward without implementing an island-wide cap. Now Folly has a moratorium in place while their council decides to either pass an ordinance submitted via a petition or push it to a vote. This occurred because they ignored warnings from their city administrator in 2021 and defeated a 2022 effort by their mayor to cap rentals. We did not want to be the last municipality with no limitations, yet here we are. Proponents of unrestricted rental growth say, this is who we are. We've always had rentals. I say this isn't who we were. It's what we've allowed ourselves to become, and where we are headed is not where we want to be. We are staring down what is defined in investment circles as an emerging asset class that is luring private equity firms, hedge funds, and international corporations into our neighborhoods. They have no connection to or concern for our way of life. We've already exceeded the cap recommended 4 months ago of the 1,554 licenses. 9 months into 2022, we are at 1,597 with no mechanism to stop the growth and no understanding of whether those folks are hoarding a license or are currently building or remodeling a home to rent. We may live on an island, but we do not live in a bubble. I ask each of you to view this through a 2020 lens, considering new data and trends, and concerning yourselves not with revenue, but with residential quality of life. Stay true to your election promises and use the recommendations submitted by planning to craft a new ordinance. Don't ignore them, because if you do, we will lose the fragile balance that has historically been our one-third, one-third, one-third status quo. It is already slipping away. I see no plan from council to make a decision. It isn't even up for discussion tonight, and you need to make one. 16 months of discussions and fact gathering is long enough. I support an island-wide cap benchmarked against our traditional one-third model, and I will continue to advocate for that at every opportunity and down every available path. Thank you.
Beach analyst.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. It's good to see everybody again. I am Howard, I'm Beach Santa, and I just want to share some of the observations I've made. And I asked, do you see what I see? And I did a sweep the other day on Ocean Boulevard, started at the sea turtle statue area to the Windjammer and back, and I only managed to pick up 549 cigarette butts. Only 549. And I said to myself, if I didn't pick those up, where would they end up? Where would they end up? It's not good. I did a sweep the other day on the beach, and I parked my car in front of my favorite thing store, and from my car to Front Beach by the bathrooms, I picked up 32 cigarette butts going that short distance. On the beach from the volleyball nets past County Park and back, only 29 cigarette butts. So I think what we're doing, we're making some improvement, we're making some headway. One thing I observed this year walking down Ocean Boulevard many times doing my sweeps is going by some of the trash cans that are in the center that people use the plastic. And I know when I get my trash dumped at the house, what I do after every dumping, I rinse out my trash can. Some of these trash cans you walk by are rather rank, and you got the bees and flies flying around them. And I want to suggest that we need to make the whole experience of people coming here to Isle of Palms, spending their hard-earned money, make the whole experience a nice experience. Walking by and some of the trash cans smell so bad, you can't stand it. but I will continue what I'm doing. We had a great successful season this year doing the beach sweeps, and I know that later on, probably in January, we'll come up with a summary of our total count, number of times, and the total pieces of litter. But I think that what we do, what I'm doing, and my inspiration I give people, it's amazing being on the beach doing a sweep, and people ask, what am I doing? And they're intrigued by seeing me walking around with my 5-gallon bucket, my grabber, my clipboard. And these people from all over the country see me doing this. And it's nice to walk on the beach and see a clean beach. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you all for signing up and participating. Next item are special presentations. First is consideration of Signal 30 Award to Harold Hirschman for saving a neighbor's life. We talked about this at our workshop a couple of weeks ago. Just real quick as a reminder for council and residents, this is an award given for special citizen service. The award occurs on an extremely limited basis as a result of a recommendation. The decision to give a citizen services award is made by city council, and the actual award is bestowed by the mayor and city council. This award was developed in 2002. It's named Signal 30 Award because Signal 30 is an IOP public safety code for citizen service. And you may remember Mr. Hirschman's story. He could not be with us tonight, so we'll vote here in a minute, then hopefully get a plaque done and coordinate with him maybe either for next council meeting or December council meeting. This is the one where there was propane and he got folks out of the house and the pets out of the house and called our IOP fire department, who kind of took it from there. So we need a motion.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Aye.
Thank you, Jim. Next is a presentation of short-term rental listening sessions report. You recall we had 3 sessions in September, roughly 140 folks participated. This presentation is in your packet. Rick Bradley led all 3 of those sessions with 5 other facilitators that we had at each session, just for some consistency. So, Mr. Bradley, come and share with us. Thanks for being here.
Good evening, council members. Commend you for scheduling those sessions to gather input from the community here around those short-term rentals. And I'll say thank you for putting me early on the agenda instead of the end. I was asked to assist in planning and organizing those sessions, and I'm here to report on those who participated and what they said. I know you received the summary report. It's in your packet. Hope you've had an opportunity to review. I don't plan to touch on every slide that's in that packet. I just plan to highlight some of the key findings that surfaced. So my summary here will be a qualitative analysis drawn from the 140 people who attended, who answered 5 questions that were put to them and captured their thoughts on 105 flip charts. The discussions were lively, and there was clearly a high degree of interest in the community and in the topic. It's important to note that there are several factors that influence the findings that I'm going to report on tonight. At the beginning of each session, I asked for them to show for a show of hands to indicate the number of those present who were full-time owners, owners of a second home, owners of a short-term rental. And I'll note that there were a few people in each session that fit into more than one of those categories as well.
Can we ask questions? Do we have the breakdown, though? I think it's very important to understand out of those 140 members or attendees, who were full-time residents, who were part-time residents, who weren't residents at all.
We did not gather that kind of data.
Did the city know, Desiree?
When people were asked to sign up, they were asked to indicate whether they were full-time residents or property non-resident property owners. We do have that information. However, we had hundreds of people sign up. Not everybody attended, but we can certainly get that.
You know, we didn't know, Mark, who had short-term rentals, who owned short-term rentals, and who did not. Okay.
No.
That was the only classification we had. Okay.
Yes, sir.
John, just overall observation from those who attending, I would say 70 to 80% in each of the 3 sessions were full-time residents by the show of hands.
Okay, good.
We encourage those table groups to capture different points of view, and many of the flip charts did indeed show some opposing views. This type of forum doesn't lend itself to being able to quantify very well how strongly each ownership group feels about the question at hand. We can't sort the data by any kind of demographic to tweeze out who said what. Still, some pretty clear messages emerged. I'll say up front, I'm not a short-term rental expert. My background is in planning, conducting sessions like these, focus groups, etc., and then objectively trying to draw conclusions from the information that was gathered. What you'll see in the report is my synopsis of the most frequent discussion points that emerged across all three sessions. While some of you were able to observe one session or more, there was no way to listen in on every table's conversation. But I felt it was important, critically important, that you have full transparency to the notes that were written on those 105 flip charts. If you want to conduct your own analysis, I've made it easy for you to dive in. Every flip chart page was numbered, digitized, and stored online. Desiree has access to those. Every flip chart was then transcribed into a Word document. The response is then sorted by question, which you have that summary in your packet as well. I encourage each of you, as well as staff, to go through that question by question, read through the text, compare the digitized versions if you want to confirm that the transcriptions that are in that Word document match the flip charts, and then draw your own conclusions. But because that bit of verbatim transcription is part of the meeting packet, it's also available to the public as well if they want to do the same. I encourage you to do that and look beyond the summary, but let's jump in here. So the first question got the sessions off to a lively start, discussing livability issues. We ask, what livability issues have you personally experienced with short-term rental properties? Noise, trash, traffic congestion led the list. We also heard that short-term rental groups larger than allowed by the occupancy limits were an issue. Parties, late nights, and safety concerns were also mentioned, which brought forward the concern that the rules and regulations for short-term rentals aren't being enforced strongly enough. In the packet, and I'm just going to show this one quickly, I included one or more word clouds for each question. They're generated simply by pasting all the responses for each question into an online tool. It shows the relevant words or phrases that appeared most often. The larger the font, the more frequently it appeared on those flip charts. I'm not going to spend any time on them, but they do help me see if I missed something that was mentioned frequently as I'm going through the material. Again, they're in your packet. Just consider them an objective comparison to what I'm noting as a summary. So, on question two, the question was, if council chose to maintain the status quo, in other words, no caps, people gave the pros and cons for doing so. I'll tell you that many of the tables move through this question fairly quickly, which sometimes can be an indication that there's more agreement among those who are participating, less discussion is needed. It's a familiar topic for them. So you can see by the list of pros mentioned most frequently, it's a relatively short list, and it was topped by property rights, tax revenues, low property taxes, flexibility for future use if I want to rent my place years down the road from now. But I'll summarize this slide and this question even further. The pros, as they saw them, were freedom and fairness. I'm free to use my property the way I want, and it's more fair when everyone is subject to the same rules. The city's not picking the winners and the losers. On the cons side, you can see that there's a wider variety of responses, many of them on the flip side of the pros list, like our taxes could go up. You see concern over enforcement surface again and the impact on livability. And that perhaps we may be inviting more investor-owned properties by not putting caps in place. But note, too, that there was some uncertainty that was expressed over the impacts. For example, the effect on property value showed up in this question as both a pro and a con. I also included in your packet for each question, 2 through 5, a few comments exactly as they're written on the flip charts. Think of them as a little color commentary. I chose them not because a specific comment. I chose them because a specific comment stood out. Maybe it was contrary to what was said by the majority, and some give you a little perspective as to the tone of the conversation at the table. I pulled the verbatims here both from the pros and cons. So for example, notice you see some of the complexity around the issue of short-term rentals began to surface here. They said, renters spend money here, but short-term rentals could explode if other communities put more restrictions in place, as you just heard a few moments ago. The property rights that existed when I bought would be maintained, but everything on the livability list will get worse. Let's go to question 3, kind of the flip side of the previous question. If council should decide to implement caps on short-term rentals, what do you consider the pros and cons to be? First, the pros that you see up there. I'll say again that the majority of the tables move through this listing of the pros fairly quickly, mentioning most often caps could help maintain the residential character of the neighborhoods. They support a sense of community and protect quality of life for us on the island. And they recognize, too, that with caps in place, there would be limits on the number of rental properties, and that would help keep the balance in place on the island that is here now. But note, too, that several tables simply wrote none on their flip chart for pros, meaning they saw no benefits to implementing caps. On the cons side, for implementing caps, they spent more time on cons than they did in documenting the negative impacts of implementing caps, saying that caps would infringe on property rights, cause a loss of tax revenues and property value, a loss of flexibility. Many saw the caps as unfair, and there was some belief that caps don't solve the livability issues that they noted in question 1. Again, enforcement surfaced here again. Note, too, again, that no caps and no zones was noted numerous times on these flip charts as well. A few, I think, telling observations on question number 3. There was almost twice as many words written on the cons list when you compare that back to the pros list. This could be an indicator of passion around this topic, as well as some disagreement on the topic or concern about the impact of caps on the island. One thing it might tell you is perhaps the case for caps and zones hasn't been well made yet. To the people that were in the room in particular. I noted, too, that there was some confusion among the participants about the caps and zones. I do recall that Doug frequently got called to the table to answer a specific question about a cap, a zone, what it meant, how it was going to be implemented potentially, et cetera. All of that tells me there's more work to do should council decide to proceed with caps and zones. And then finally, in the verbatims for this question, I'll call out a couple of comments again that reinforce that freedom versus fairness dilemma that emerged throughout. It was noted that second homes wouldn't get to vote on a cap, assuming that there was going to be a vote. But said differently, they were acknowledging that owners of second homes may not have the same voice as full-time residents who are here full-time and have the ability to attend the sessions. The other one that I'll call out is caps and zones could potentially create an air of exclusivity in some neighborhoods, and that was voiced as a concern. So, fourth question was, based upon your discussions that you've had on the first three questions, what recommendations do you have for actions council might take on the Planning Commission's recommendations? Short-term rental rules and regulations surface clearly here, with some of the more frequent responses being enforce the current rules and regs, more staff to do the enforcement, increase and enforce the penalties for violations, and tighten up some of the rules such as occupancy levels and licensing requirements. There was also a plea to council to focus on the livability issues that were addressed by question one. And if you look at this slide as well as the verbatim comments that I pulled out for question four, you'll see that while a call to protect property rights surfaced with many of those who don't want caps, there were some that were saying that an island-wide cap might be preferable over zones, with the discussion regarding fairness perhaps being behind that. There was also a smaller contingent that I have to point out too that does support some caps of some type. And then finally, fifth question was, what's the one most important message for council that surfaced at your table? The overall response was start with enforcement of the current rules and regulations having to do with short-term rentals, strengthen them where needed, focus on quality of life and livability. They believed that caps won't address their livability concerns, but enforcement will. Limit occupancy levels, protect property rights. I didn't see in the responses here a strong voice of support for caps and zones again, with some thinking that council has bigger issues to focus on. Again, the verbatim comments that you have in the packet reflect the diversity of opinions, with some saying, whatever you do, it should apply to everyone, but asking you to err on the side of residents. There was solid agreement that property rights and community livability are important, but they were divided on how to prioritize there. One table group in particular summed it up this way. They said, we are divided, we have polar opposite views, some, and again, this was one table's response, some want zero short-term rentals, some are okay with 100% short-term rentals, and somewhere, some are in between. So good luck with that. I'll put a big red bow on all of this if you look out across all five of the questions. I saw the three listening sessions as a lively debate, with property rights and livability being two of the dominant themes, and stronger enforcement of short-term rental rules being a priority for those that participated over caps and zones. I'm going to encourage you to take the time, read through the transcribed flip charts. There's a lot of information in there. Some clear themes emerged. And while it's difficult to quantify how strongly specific opinions might be and how they differ from one demographic group to another, in my experience, I followed things like focus groups and listening sessions like this with a more quantitative study to get a better understanding, help you reach a larger audience with a survey, including those who are not living here, and may help you better understand the magnitude of the differences in the various constituency. Appreciate the time. I'll take any other questions you might have.
Right. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Rick, thank you for the presentation and a lot of data here to absorb. Had a chance to read it and reread it, and also the other information we got from a survey fairly recently from the Barrier Island Preservation Association as well. I also had the opportunity to attend all three sessions, so I was able to be there in an old retired guy, spend a little time, and didn't get involved in the table conversation, but saw the recaps of each. And it very clearly came out of there that out of those groups and those sessions, to me, what really struck me is that by and large, they weren't in favor of caps. And they also were in favor of much more enforceability than what we've had in the past. It seemed that that was where they were going. It seems like the most important messages that you had here under Q5 start with enforcement of current SDR rules and regulations, strength that were needed, you know, and no strong support for caps and zones, and focus on quality of life and livability. And I think we all, as Iowan residents, certainly want to have that. One of the things that kind of strikes me, and Councilmember Boghossian touched on this a little bit when we were talking about the percentages of, you know, full-time mm-hmm. residents versus part-time or second homeowners, and we really didn't capture that in these 140 people
right.
that attended this session here. But with the other analysis or survey that was done with BIPA, there was 340 emails sent and they had a 29% response rate for the month of July. Which I think is really probably good. A really good response
Absolutely.
Rate for any type of survey that's sent out. And of that group, they are 69% wanted a cap of some sort. So there really is a disconnect here. I don't know, to me, whether it was because the listening sessions attendees were highly motivated coming in there to, you know, to really talk to no caps, more enforceability. And that was what they're driving for. She had that one outlier with the table that mm-hmm. just didn't agree on anything. So I don't know if it was that or, and they were just all, you know, pretty much all focused in one direction there. But it does seem that on the other analysis, we did have more of a, you know, kind of a dispersal of how people felt about not only SDR restrictions and caps and that sort of thing, but, and I'm not saying that was better than what you have. I just think that somewhere between the two sessions, the listening session and the other survey that was done, mm-hmm. that we need to really dig deeply into that and see what the answers are. I think all of us are afraid that we may have things that come up in the future with fractional ownership and other things that happen. But by and large, that really, as a resident, I think that probably enforceability and seeing if we do need to limit short-term rentals, how we go about doing that, whether it be an island-wide cap or certain areas, is probably something we need to dig more and more into. So.
Yeah, and Rusty, I would add to that, I would factor in also that the number of questions that came up from the tables around specifics about the caps and the zones is an indication that there's not a really good understanding out there of what might potentially be put in place and what the impact of that might be.
Which is concerning given all the information that's been out there. And I know everybody doesn't have the time, you know, busy lives, children, working, I get it. I never followed this stuff before I got on council, quite frankly, retired and then got on council. So you don't follow it as closely as all of us junkies do. But you know, it's like, there are a lot of people out there, I think, that really still don't understand the ramifications of what, you know, what caps are needed in what areas, if any, and also certainly, I think, enforceability. If you're a longtime resident, you've always had the experience, it may be a one-off or whatever, where you've had a noisy neighbor, you know, with a rental or even a regular neighbor from time to time.
The other way I saw that confusion play out too was the fact that some of the same answers were showing up on the pros list as on the cons
right.
list. So they really trying to understand the impacts was not clearly understood by everyone.
Okay, I took my time, so thank you.
Sure. Scott.
Yeah, I was on the Planning Commission when we started this 16 months ago, so I have a little bit of end-to-end perspective. And the question I think we were trying to answer originally was, do we want to be a residential community with rentals, or do we want to become a rental community with residents? And I don't know if that question was even addressed or discussed, but with the recent trend of adding 200 rentals, I think we flipped. I think we were a residential community with rentals, and I think we may become already a rental community with residents. So was that discussed at all?
Not specifically in those terms. But I think the way it would play out, what we did hear loudly and clearly, quality of life and livability, or a primary concern. And if that is flipping, then that's going to bring...
I think we, with the numbers, the way I look at them from where they were back in April of last year, and when we got that first data point, if the rentals are coming out of the residential pool primarily, then we probably flipped. So I think that's something that we as a community need to really be aware of. And how far do we want to take that?
Yep.
I would just like to let everybody know that as part of the public comments, the study from HIPAA that Rusty acknowledged is in the packet or in the public comments. So the public can go and look at those results as well. They are a little bit conflicting to what we're hearing here. They're two different methodologies of surveys. And so I think we'll dig in and look at them. But I think it was all good data for us to consider.
Yeah, good. I think Jan had a question.
Yes, Jan.
I just wanted to make one comment. Well, the one thing that's missing from this that we really need to know, that hopefully, Desiree, you can provide, is the breakdown between how many permanent residents attended, how many second homeowners and non-residents attended, and how many of those permanent residents had short-term rentals. I even heard that there was a group from Wild Dunes, the resort, that were attending that had mostly a whole table there, that were there obviously to protect their interest in what is going on. So something like this, the people who are most motivated are the ones that think they have something to lose, not something to gain. So we need to make sure that this data doesn't show that side, skewed toward that side of the spectrum, rather than the BIPA survey, which went out to mostly residents at home who could complete in their leisure, that probably was more representative of the residents of the island.
Yeah, that's fair.
I have a question. So, Jimmy, go ahead. The city put on these listening sessions, and it was advertised a lot, and 140 people showed up. I was just wondering how the private group sent out the surveys to residents, how they picked who they sent the packets to or the questionnaires, because I didn't get one, and a lot of my friends didn't get one. And I wondered, maybe you had to sign up for it or something, I don't know. But I just think that the city's listening session mean a lot to me, because a lot of people were there. They were, as Jan said, they were highly motivated to be there. So I did not take part in the other survey.
Mr. Mayor, the bump in short-term rental licenses may very well be people that are scared that we're going to put us up a cap, and they're hoarding of the permits. If it's possible, I would ask that we look at perhaps doing some type of a stay on issuing more licenses until such time as council makes a decision, just to stop people from hoarding licenses because they're afraid we may do something.
So kind of the folly model?
Yes.
Yeah. Other questions, comments?
I would support that.
Desiree, anything to add from?
No, sir.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Next item is approval of previous meetings minutes. We've got quite a number. City Council regular meeting on September 27th, special council meeting on October 11th, City Council workshop on October 11th, special personnel committee meeting on October 18th, public hearing on October 18th, special council meeting on October 18th, and special real property committee on October 20th. Very motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Any discussion or edits?
Mr. Pierce did pass it along to me for the special council meeting last week on Tuesday, and I did make those corrections.
Okay. Thank you, Scott. Got a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. Next item five, old business. Update on efforts to install an elevator in the new Marina restaurant. Desiree, I'll give you a quick update, and you can add to it if you want to. I think we're still waiting on Trident Construction for a final memo to show viability of the location that they have identified and a rough order of magnitude estimate, and then we'll discuss with the restaurant whether the location outlined will be feasible from their view. So I think there's more to come. Desiree, anything you would like to add?
No, nothing new. We continue to have conversations with our with Marker 116 about their operational considerations with the proposed location that seemed to be viable to our folks and our friends from Trident. You know, I think that they are generally in agreement in trying to facilitate the installation of an elevator. I think we just need a little bit more detail once we receive the memo from Trident about the exact location, the clearances, and how that may or may not impact their operations and the locations of their tables. So more on that, but we don't have the final report yet.
Any questions, comments?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, Desiree, do we have any idea when Trident may come back with some cost estimates and construction options, I guess you should say? You know, it seems like it's been forever, but September 27th, I believe, when we first talked about this, council or whatever, so it's not really been a full month yet, but any idea of timing as to when they may come back?
So when I reached out to them last week, just asking for an update, they were waiting on the final determination from the restaurant, and because we don't have that in writing yet, I just told them to go ahead and finish their memo. There's really only one viable alternative from a structural perspective. That's the information we need from them. And he said that he can turn it back to us pretty quickly. I don't know what quickly means, but I don't anticipate us waiting for it for more than an additional week.
And the feedback from the restaurant means what? They're waiting on what?
We are waiting on their final sort of green light that the location that seems viable, as proposed by Trident, is something that they can manage operationally.
Okay. Thank
you. Further questions? Just wondered, I'm not quite sure who's going to pay for it.
We haven't talked about that yet.
Okay.
The motion that was done by council in November of 2021 was for the city to evaluate and research not only the viability, but also whether or not the city could use tourism funds from ATAX to pay for the installation of the elevator. That's going to be up to the city council to decide if it wants to pay for it in full, or it would be a cost share. The restaurant would definitely have to agree to that.
Thanks.
Thank you, Desiree. Item B, discussion and consideration of proposed changes to the noise ordinance. You've got a draft in your packet. Quite a number of open issues still left on this. Desiree, do you want to kind of walk through where we are and what we have in front of us?
Sure. So in your packets, you have the first draft of an ordinance, of a red line ordinance that we're going to continue to work on. This ordinance is based off of a draft that the town of Mount Pleasant is currently evaluating, very similar to the noise ordinance that's currently in place in the town of Kiowa. We are still doing some research looking at other communities that, you know, balance of sort of a resort within the community and are tourism destinations. So we are looking at other decibel ratings and what those would look like. One of the feedback that I wanted to share with you all that we're getting from residents that are interested in the outcome of this revision is having different decibel readings by zone and by hour and by day. I think that the goal is to find something that is reasonable surrounding residential communities, another of residential communities that are close to commercial operations, not only Front Beach, but also I think Wall Dunes and the resort. So that's what we're looking at. I would like to get some reaction from the version that we have in front of you. We put some decibel limits there, 75 and 60. as being maximums depending on the area, whether it's residential or close to a commercial location. So we're still working through this. In the packet, we also included the current version of the noise ordinance, and there are a couple sections that are not treated in the red line. There, some of them might be redundant and not necessary to include, but again, we want to hear feedback from the community whether or not including a section on pets, so one example, and vehicles is something that needs to be included or maybe dealt with as part of the implementation of a decibel maximum.
I have a couple comments.
Yeah.
I guess the first comment, just to make sure that everybody understands a decibel. The decibel scale is a logarithmic scale, so it's not linear. So if you have an increase in 10 decibels on the decibel scale, it equals a 10 times that in sound pressure. In other words, it's 100 times that in sound. So it's not. It's kind of like the Richter scale for earthquakes. But having said that, I think in Part B, I feel like the levels that you have in there are probably good starting points. That are 60, 60 for residential during the daytime, 75 for commercial, and then at nighttime, 55. But in under B, where it says the measurements will be taken, and we take in with the sound meter from the property line of the complainant's property, I think it should be added from the nearest point of the property line from the originating noise. In other words, the noise is here, you don't want to go off the other side of the property. You want to be the closest to where the noise is originating. And then I guess the last thing I'd say, there should be some catch-all in there like there is now, I think, that if you're hearing noise inside your house, it's probably too loud.
And I'm trying to, for some reason my PDF is not working, but in the red line it includes in specific prohibitions, includes any amplified sound that is audible from inside a residence. So that is included as a specific prohibition.
Okay. That's it.
Jimmy.
So when you say inside the residence, do that include screen porches?
No. I don't think so. I think it's inside the house, doors closed, windows closed. That is across the board what we've seen, how that's defined.
Well, I don't hope I'm not out of line. If I am, please stop me. But I just want to know, we have an immediate concern on 57th Avenue every day. And I have a friend, Ms. Williamson. She's like 90 years old. She lives really close to the resort there, the pool. And I was just wondering how are we doing with those folks to help them out?
Sure. We've entertained a couple meetings with particularly Mr. Plows, who I think has become a little bit of a spokesperson for some of the folks that live in that area. Chief Cornett has met with them too. Our encouragement has been contact the non-emergency number and report it as a complaint. That will generate an officer to be sent to the area where the complaint is being issued. And use discretion. All we have right now is the ordinance that's in place. And then, the officer responding to that would look at the enforcement factors that are included in the code and make a determination on whether or not a complaint is founded or unfounded, when whether a citation or a warning is issued. In addition to that, we have been meeting with our folks from, the management from Waldoons. As a result of our meeting, they removed the four speakers that are closest to the adjacent residence. We'll look into whether or not they've increased the volume on the other ones, and that's continuing to create a problem. We heard that during public comment today. In that meeting, we agreed to employing a sound engineer to come in, sort of a third party, to evaluate what sound abatement measures, something that we can require the resort to implement. In addition to that, we're researching. We're looking at other resorts and trying to figure out something that's the right balance. But it is a commercial property.
And it is a residential property.
And it is a residential community that's immediately adjacent to it.
Right, so the speakers are 360 degrees, and they are closer from me to you from Ms. Williamson's green porch.
Yeah.
And so when you talk about noise abatement, possibilities, are you, what are you talking about, a wall, or what are you talking about?
You know, we're looking at everything. I mean, we want to have somebody that can come in and make some recommendations. You know, one of the concerns with the installation of a wall is that a lot of the complaints are coming from a second or third floor. And a wall is not really going to, you know, positively change, you know, mitigate that. That's part of the challenge.
Okay, I just have one last thing to say, and I appreciate you listening to me, but I encourage you, all the council members, please go up there. I would say that none of you will want to listen. I mean, live in that situation. It's not good at all. And I think we need to do what we can to help them.
So Desiree, next step on that is find an engineer and let them give us some suggestions.
And in the meantime, I mean, I think that they need to continue to contact and issue the formal complaints for the police department.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, have we issued a citation yet?
I will.
And I mean, the ordinance that we have now it's not perfect, but it is enforceable and it is possible. And this is just one example that we are hearing, you know, with this short-term rental thing, so many people are complaining about non-enforcement. And how many of these things are we just letting go and letting go, and then that's making people angrier. I don't understand why we keep hearing from poor Mr. Krause and nothing seems to be getting done about it.
I just have one. Jimmy and John, please chime in. I went down to the site as well, and just imagine 9 surround sound Bose speakers up against your property that are playing music, and the music, the closest person that's going to hear the music at the resort is probably on the other side of the building here. But the residential people that are listening to it every day, all day, are right here where we're sitting. And what the resort did was they removed 4 of the 9 speakers, which really, in my opinion, didn't do a whole lot. It certainly didn't help out Jimmy's friend. What I would ask is, can the resort consider moving the remaining 5 speakers, and then maybe replacing their speakers with directional speakers like they have at their other facilities? Very nice, beautiful speakers that are directional, that are not pointed at the residential buildings and the residences that are living there. It seems to me like it would be an easy fix. If you walk out there, it looked like they did a quick band-aid pull on those 4 speakers. I think the Klauses and their neighbors are enjoying too much music on a daily basis, and this would be an easy fix. And John, Jim, am I off base there?
No, I agree. I think when I went out there, that was an easy fix. The speakers are a long way from the pool area. They have to turn them up so loud for their guests to be able to hear them that it's really impacting that neighborhood right there. So it would be an easy fix, just remove the speakers. If you want to put some directional speakers, as Scott says, closer to the pool area, that's a fix. And I think that takes probably 70% of the issues they're facing is from those speakers. And we can address that. And as far as the sound, the sound debate, it seems like that's something they should pay for, not the city. I mean, they're creating the sound.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be entertaining or hiring or getting a sound engineer, a sound abatement process in place. They should do that.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I guess, back to the removal of the speakers, they removed those 4 speakers as, I think, an act of good faith immediately after our meeting. I don't think that they are opposed to evaluating whether or not that had a positive or negative impact in the noise to the surrounding neighborhood. So we'll go back to them and make that request. In terms of the paying, when we discussed that, we obviously didn't agree on anything, but their concern was that if it was something that they paid for, that folks would think that they would water down, if you will, the recommendations if it's somebody that is working for them and, you know, maybe bringing in somebody that's a third party, non-biased, not really tied to anybody, then maybe the result of those recommendations, whether or not they're feasible for the restaurant, for the resort, at least there's a sense of impartiality there. But we can, you know, we can go back and have those discussions with them. We are planning on having a follow-up meeting next week to evaluate some of the feedback that we've been getting after our meeting, and, you know, we'll continue down the path, try to get some solutions here. And I know Chief, for that meeting, he collected a lot of data from the noise complaints and you know, the police response. I think that he can share that.
Yes. And we did pull our calls for service for the hotel for the year, but when we pulled those, remember that is managed through Charleston County Consolidated Dispatch. And so how they put those calls in, we found actually anything in that vicinity, they're putting in for that address. So we were not very confident in all of these numbers, but we did ask them to pull calls related to disturbances and nuisances because that's how they put them in. The downside to that is that could be a loud noise complaint. That could be somebody who just saw somebody that was outside, and we stopped to go talk to them. But with that, we saw 8 in 2021 calls of that type, and then we saw 21 for 2022 so far this year. In reference to the Klaus's, I think their most recent email, they were pretty satisfied with our approach and how we're working with them to mitigate these resources. We have officers that work out at that event, and they are instructed to walk that perimeter continuously to make sure that sound is not getting out. That is something that started this week, pushing that out to make sure that we are being proactive on our end so that it never has to turn into a complaint from a resident. We have shut down other events taking place, and even some of them aren't necessarily events, but they're just people that are talking, and so we've encouraged them to go inside as opposed to standing outside to talk. Not all of them are yelling or playing music, just loud talking, and so we push them inside to avoid that.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. A couple of things, Chief, you might probably want to stay there for just a minute anyway. I mean, I know we're talking about this situation here, which I've certainly been following, and it's really one that is really tough for the residents up there on 57th, that area there. So feel for them, and hopefully we can get some solutions in place here. And I know this has been ongoing. I guess my issue is going to be with the greater island mass, I guess you'd say. We have short-term rentals, we have noisy neighbors, I mean, you go on and on and on, and routinely we do get complaints, and I guess most of them probably come in on the weekend, as to noise and music and things just kind of getting out of hand in some of the neighborhoods. And I guess my question would be, particularly given like some of the attention we've had to pay to that one situation with the large venue down there, the hotel and the music and even the talking outside that may be over the top, do we have staff? I mean, are we able to really effectively enforce any noise ordinance we put in place on a day-in, day-out basis, and particularly on the weekends, once we get, some criteria in place to really effectively handle all the issues we have? I firmly believe that there are a lot of people who just don't call in, that they have noisy neighbors around them for whatever reason. They say, it'll get quiet in an hour or two. I just want to call it in. And I'm not trying to encourage people to just call it in for no reason at all. But my question is more around the staffing issue and how we can effectively enforce anything we put in place in regards to a noise ordinance going forward, knowing that there's going to be a lot of critical eyes and ears looking at what we do. And I just don't want to see it be another ordinance that we put in place and then immediately come under a lot of criticism that another ordinance we don't even enforce. So probably more of a rant than it is a question, but if you got anything to add.
Yes, sir. So a couple things. We have a new program that we have started using, and we'll be able to put the portal on our website soon. We do have a lot of people that do not call, and we encourage them, even if they feel like it's not. My philosophy has always been, we're here, call us. It's not like we're coming from our house to go respond to these. We're out here working, so make the phone call. And that has been our message. If you hear something, if you see something, call the police and let us come respond. If it's nothing, then we will just clear it as it being unfounded. If it's something, then we'll address it. With the new software that we have, it will provide an opportunity, once we get it on our website and we're running 100% with it, it will provide the opportunity for a portal for anybody to go into and make their complaint right there, or their concerns, and it will be forwarded straight to the code enforcement officer to follow up on, or the officers that are working. If it's going on, we'll encourage people to call us, but if it's something that is like a short-term rental complaint, then they can put that into that portal. It'll go to the code enforcement officer to follow up on. That also gives us a better tracking system to track any of these nuisance properties so that we can address those in the right manner. You know, in the past, it's been an Excel sheet. This is going to be a much better platform that gives us that ability to move forward with that software tracking. And as far as enforcing the noise ordinance, any police officer has the ability to enforce the noise ordinance. It doesn't have to be a code enforcement officer. Right now, what we're doing is our police officers respond. If our code enforcement officer or livability officer are working, then they go to it. We have a full-time code enforcement, which is handling our livability, and then we have a part-time position, and we've been speaking with the city administration about how we look to work on that one. We're not getting a lot of applicants for the part-time position. Unfortunately, it's not gathering the attention that we thought. So we're kind of going back to the drawing board to see how can we make this more enticing so that we do get more applicants. And ideally, if we have that, we'll have a day shift livability and an evening shift livability so that there's always somebody there that can go respond to it. Most of our residents tell me they don't call because they don't want to pull a police officer off of patrol. This will solve that problem. And so we're already working on that to make that easier for them and make residents feel more comfortable. But in the meantime, please, our message is call us and we will respond.
Hey, I'm not sure your question got answered. Hey.
I have a different question. I mind mostly, but once this portal's up and running, will people be able to see, like if you made a complaint, what the result was?
It will have an option for them to be able to be updated on where that enforcement stands, what steps they're going to. It's really great because it makes the code enforcement officer or whoever is following up on these, it gives them the steps inside of it on what to do next, so it makes it really easy. And then that should be visible to the individual who left the concern or the complaint.
Because I think that is kind of going to the crux of the issue of Bedwell Dunes, is that people don't know if or what is happening after they make a complaint, and I think that would be really helpful for people to know that. And that might actually also help people to be more active, and so that sounds awesome.
Yes, ma'am, that's our hope.
And what's your timing?
Our timing for this. That system's already operational. We just got to plug it into the website, and it'll be a little link they push, and it takes them to a separate page that they just make it in there. So it's ready once we figure out where we're putting it on the web page, so that it's easiest for people to access. I don't want them to have to dig through our website to find it.
And just another point that I wanted to make, you know, at any given time, we only have 3 officers on shift. I think that the plan that we're working on and having that code enforcement during the day shift and the night shift will be very helpful. But sometimes folks get frustrated when they make a call at, let's say, 9:22, and then the officers, you know, show up at 9:50. Well, that is, you know, the likelihood is that they're responding to another call, and they have to prioritize the type of calls with the staff that we have on a regular shift. So, I think that knowing that it's important that we do have limited staff, and we're down 2 officers. So those are all things that I think are coming into play that we need to fix to be fully staffed and be able to respond to these effectively and efficiently.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, James.
I'd just like to add 1 or 2 things. The first is that this noise ordinance can be a very effective tool, as we've seen in the past, when it gives the police officer the opportunity to approach a home where more than just noise may be the problem. And that gives us entrance to some of these short-term rentals that have too many people in the house, or too large a party going on, or anything like that. But the most important part of, I think, for the police officers is have measurable criteria that we can use so that these, if something does happen to go to court, we do have something that's useful, so it doesn't get broken out of court or whatever. And I applaud the steps we are taking in that direction right now. I think this ordinance needs a little more work, a little tightening up. There's still a few conflicting areas, and the biggest problem is going to be the boundary line between a commercial and a residential area, and how do we measure that, and what do we do in those areas? I don't think that's been addressed yet, and I don't know what the solution would be. Not only Wild Dunes and the resort, but Front Beach and the Windjammer is an issue that comes up often. So I think we've got a ways to go. We're definitely moving in the right direction. And I definitely want everybody to, I'll repeat what John Boghossian said about the decibel scale. 60 decibels is about normal speech. 120 decibels is not twice as loud. It's more than 1,000 times louder. So when you're talking about the scale, you need to make sure you understand the difference in noise levels. Even though it may be a small jump up, it could be a significant difference. But I applaud that, what you're doing. And the only other question I have is this is being handled right now internally with the staff. Is there a time when we need for it to go to the Public Safety Committee for final review or action before it comes back to council? And that's a question, not a statement.
Certainly up to council if they want to refer this matter to a special meeting of the Public Safety Committee to review.
What I would suggest is you, as the chairman, call me.
I think it's going to take that kind of time and focus to work to tighten it up to Jan's comment or fill in some holes that are there. Because Desiree, I mean, I'm guessing you don't have enough direction to walk out of here tonight. I mean, you certainly heard the urgency around the resort conversation and following up on that and making sure we can move that along, obviously a lot faster than this might go. But Jan, I think that's the path personally.
Okay. Then when the time is appropriate, we'll wait for staff to notify us, and then we will meet to do some final reviews before bringing it back to council. Thanks.
Any other thoughts or
Deborah,
are you good at this point?
Yes, sir.
Item C, update on requests for proposals for city attorney and assistant city attorney. Going to the personnel committee. John, you want to update?
Yeah, so the city issued an RFP for the city attorney and assistant city attorney. The RFPs were due back on October the 14th. We received three proposals for the city attorney and two proposals for the assistant city attorney. The personnel committee reviewed those proposals at the meeting they had on October the 18th and decided to interview all those that submitted a proposal, and the date that we're doing those interviews is on November the 1st. So the personnel committee plans to recommend to full council on at the November 15th meeting their recommendation for a city and assistant city attorney.
Thank you. Questions or comments from any other committee members? Thank you, John. Item six, new business, consideration of award of a contract. Item D, under old business, first, consideration of purchase of used back trailer truck for stormwater maintenance. You've got a memo in your packet. Donnie, I think you want to provide some additional commentary. Please.
Robert.
Robert.
I'll let Robert do this one.
Okay, this is what we discussed last time. It is a jetback trailer that we would be able to provide at higher level of maintenance, especially now that we're going to have about 11 new tide valves installed. With the addition of Lenton Sharp, our stormwater foreman, he used to run this vac trailer that was in a truck version for the town of Mount Pleasant and was very successful on keeping the drainage running properly there. We went out sole source for this because there really wasn't another jetback that was compatible to that. And the ones that we did find, I think we found one in Georgia, that was a little bit less money, but it wasn't comparable. Any questions on
that? Yeah, Desiree.
Yeah, I just want to add, we talked about the couple items on the current budget that we are deferring so that we can reallocate those funds towards the purchase of this used equipment. One is the aerial boom lift that we requested to purchase that to help facilitate the installation of the holiday lights at Front Beach and also for building maintenance. It is not an urgent need. We have been going by leasing this piece of equipment when necessary. So that's something that we're recommending that we reallocate towards this purchase. That's $25,000 in the budget. The other item that we included in this current fiscal FY23 budget is $15,000 for the lease of a mini excavator that we wanted to try out to do in-house storm drainage, stormwater drainage maintenance that we want to redirect to for the purchase of this used equipment. It is in very good condition, and we think it'll help us and improve significantly our ongoing maintenance. The difference between the total cost of the used jet back trailer truck and these items that we've identified will be made up by doing in-house some of the cleaning of the pipes that are included in the on this year's schedule with our outsourced drainage management company. So we'll be able to make up that difference pretty easily. Based on their analysis, if we clean in-house about 41 drop inlets and about 32 pipes, we will make up the entire cost of this equipment. So we don't have to be as aggressive in doing it in-house, but refocus the time and expense that we have in our current drainage contract to the big, the big pieces of infrastructure that have been installed in the city recently, and then some of the smaller pipes. It's something that the city can do internally, and again, tapping into the expertise that we have with our new foreman, I think will be pretty significant.
And I think the last time someone said that, in addition, it'll give us flexibility to get these kind of things done on our own terms instead of waiting on someone else.
Correct.
Is that another benefit?
Correct.
Yes. Yeah, that's what we've been finding hard to get the contractors out here. So we'll identify a problem. It could go 2-3 weeks, a month before we can actually get them out here. Then there's another problem and another problem. So this will give us the ability to do it in-house, get it done quickly, and just provide a higher level of drainage maintenance than we had before.
And in the long run, save money.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Correct.
And we can make adjustments to, is it Edie?
Yeah. Yes.
So we can make adjustment to Edie's contract based on the usage that we have with this other piece of equipment?
Yes.
That's right. We are not doing away with that contract.
Right.
I think we
understand that.
We want to keep that. But there are some locations that we can do in-house with this piece of equipment and then just redirect them to maybe some of the areas that are more, infrastructure is bigger.
Okay.
So just to be clear, if we have a $300,000 contract with Edie's, we're not suggesting that we're not going to have a $250,000 contract with Edie's. We're still going to keep a $300,000 annual work.
Correct.
So it's not going to be a net savings to the city.
For this first year, we do think that by redirecting some of the resources with Edie's, we will get a net savings of that difference between what we've identified in the budget and the total cost. But we'll maintain our budgeted numbers, on an ongoing basis. It's just that we're going to be able to do more than we have in the past and quicker.
Yeah. Remind me of the purchase price for this.
It's $54,000. And the comparable newer model, I think, was $138,000, but then you had to add about $115,000 in for what this machine has on it.
The trailer is going to be connected to an existing vehicle, so we don't need to purchase a vehicle.